Hi, I'm Sammy, an associate in the commercial disputes team at Womblebond Dickinson.
And I'm Stephen, a partner in the same team.
Welcome back to our mini-podcast series on authorised push payment, i.e. APP fraud. Our last episode focused on several judgments relating to a bank's quince care duty. This episode discusses the facts and issues raised in one particular case, that is Stanford International Bank versus HSBC, and that includes the Supreme Court's decision and what impact that has. Stephen, could you please start by reminding us what the quince care duty is for those who may not have listened to previous episodes?
Sure. The quince care duty is a duty of care that banks owe to their customers in circumstances where the banks have reasonable grounds to believe that instructions provided by customers are an attempt to misappropriate funds. To protect customers, banks are able to refuse to comply with the instruction. In some cases, banks may be obligated to take positive steps to investigate whether a payment instruction is an attempt to defraud its customer.
Thanks, Stephen. So banks are increasingly expected to play a significant role in preventing financial crime. And can you briefly outline the facts of the Stanford case for us?
Yes. Stanford International Bank, who I'll refer to as SIB, said that it had been defrauded by its owner, who had been operating a Ponzi fraud scheme for some years before SIB's liquidation in April 2009. SIB was set up by Alan Stanford, who sports fans may remember was once a sponsor of the 2020 cricketing format. He is currently serving a 110-year prison sentence in Florida for this fraud. SIB's liquidators brought proceedings against HSBC, who had operated various accounts for SIB until they were frozen in February 2009. One of the claims was that HSBC negligently failed to spot signs that SIB was being run as a Ponzi scheme, having been put on notice that instructions to make payments may have been part of the fraud. That is the quince care claim. SIB argued that by the 1st of August 2008, at the latest, HSBC was under a quince care duty of care to refuse to accept Mr. Stanford's instructions as to what to do with the balance standing in SIB's accounts, meaning payments made between the 1st of August 2008 and February 2009 should not have been made. HSBC made an application to strike out or to obtain reverse summary judgment in respect of the liquidator's quince care claim on the basis that SIB had suffered no loss and therefore had no claim in damages.
Thank you, Stephen. That's a really helpful summary. And on these facts, the High Court initially held that SIB would have had assets of $116 million if HSBC had frozen the accounts on 1st of August 2008, available then for the liquidators to pursue claims. HSBC was unsuccessful and SIB's quince care claim survived.
That's right, Sammy. However, this decision was appealed and the Court of Appeal overturned it. It found in HSBC's favour in respect of the quince care claim and struck it out. It stated that the High Court had made an error in its reasoning by confusing the company's position before and after the inception of an insolvency process. In the eventual inception of its insolvency, if the company had more cash for the liquidators to pursue claims and for distribution to creditors, it would be a benefit to creditors, but not so much to the company while it was trading.
Thank you, Stephen. So one win for each party. So what did the Supreme Court decide upon further appeal?
Well, the Supreme Court was only asked to consider whether, even if HSBC did owe a quince care duty and had breached it, this gave rise to a recoverable loss by SIB. This was a narrow point. The court did not look at whether HSBC did actually owe such a duty or whether it did actually breach it.
Yeah, so there's a limit as to how helpful this judgment actually is in terms of considering the scope of the quince care duty. But in any event, the Supreme Court held that where HSBC actioned instructions that may have been part of a fraud, but which resulted in creditors being repaid, then regardless of whether it had a quince care duty and if it did, had breached it, the fact that SIB was in liquidation and that the relevant funds would still have been due to creditors meant that SIB had no recoverable loss to claim. SIB's case evolved in the course of the proceedings. Firstly, it said that if HSBC had not wrongly paid out the £116 million from SIB's bank account, then that money would still be in its bank account and SIB would therefore be better off by that amount. However, that approach is too simplistic because, in fact, the £116 million paid out did relieve SIB of £116 million worth of debt that it owed to customers.
SIB then said that the damage it suffered is instead the loss of a chance. At the time the disputed payments were made, the company was hopelessly insolvent and it has since gone into liquidation. SIB argued that if HSBC had not made the payments, many customers would have had to prove their debts in the liquidation and would be likely to receive a dividend of only a few pence in the pound. SIB's loss is therefore the loss of a chance of discharging those debts for a few pence in the pound. But this is clearly not a financial loss suffered by SIB. The Supreme Court therefore dismissed the appeal by majority, agreeing with the Court of Appeal that the Quincecare claim must be struck out. It found that even if HSBC had not made the payments, the monies would have been discharged in paying customers. This meant SIB had no recoverable loss and had not suffered the loss of a chance that had any pecuniary value to it.
Thank you, Stephen. So what we know from this judgment is that a claimant who claims that a Quincecare duty is owed still needs to prove a recoverable loss in order to be successful.
Exactly.
I thought it was also interesting to note Lord Sale's dissenting judgment in that case. He agreed that if HSBC had complied with the Quincecare duty, the relevant funds would have remained in SIB's accounts until it was put into liquidation, when such funds would have been placed under the control of the liquidators to swell the assets available in the liquidation. He then says, however, that SIB would not have paid many of its customers the full debts due to them, which by reason of SIB's insolvency were not in fact liable to be paid in full, and which, had the truth been known to SIB, acting by relevant and honest office holders, it would have chosen not to pay. Instead, all customers would have received only a small proportion of the debt due to them in the liquidation.
Yes, and Lord Sales also says that the liquidators of SIB would have had a larger pool of assets available to them to pursue possible claims against third parties, with a view to increasing the dividend, which might be payable to creditors. In these circumstances, Lord Sales considered that the company has in fact suffered a loss. As a result of the alleged breach of the Quincecare duty by HSBC, there has been a diversion of the funds in the HSBC accounts from all creditors to the early customers, that is, those who withdrew their funds before the Ponzi scheme collapsed and therefore were paid in full and suffered no loss. And this was at a time when SIB's own interest in the proper administration of its affairs was that the funds should have been retained in order that they could be paid to all of their creditors. This diversion of funds to an improper destination represents a loss to the company itself, Lord Sales thought. In essence, SIB paid the early customers more to discharge the debts due to them than they were worth truly at the time, thereby depleting its assets without full value in return and reducing what was available to it to spend in other ways it would have chosen had it appreciated what its true responsibilities were.
That is an interesting point, and I can see the force behind that argument. Quite rightly, in my opinion, Lord Sales also makes the point that the Quincecare duty should be kept within narrow bounds so that a bank is able to act upon the payment instructions given to it by its customers promptly and without fear. He says that the solution to keeping its effect within proper bounds lies in analysis of the scope of the duty itself as to when it applies, and not in distorting the question whether the company has suffered loss.
I'm inclined to agree too. Right, Sammy, do you have any concluding remarks for this case?
I would just add that given the Supreme Court in Stamford did not consider the scope of the Quincecare duty or whether it was breached, we still do not have a complete picture of the applicability of the duty and the obligations on banks. This will not, therefore, be the last word on the wider subject. We know that the case of Phillips v. Barclays was heard in the Supreme Court in early February this year, but we are still awaiting judgment on that one. Once judgment has been handed down, we will run another podcast on that, because I'm sure that will bring up some interesting points.
We will definitely need to look at that judgment, which hopefully will give a clearer picture as to the scope of the Quincecare duty and how the courts expect banks to act under this duty.
Great. We shall conclude this episode here. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for our next podcast on the Phillips v. Barclays case. We would also encourage you to please comment or write to us in case you want us to cover any other topic of interest. Thank you.